Have you ever wondered what Amsterdam is all about? Don't just read about the culture that has accepted cannabis. Experience it firsthand with CS Travel's Sensible Amsterdam Tour with Normal. Travel to one of Europe's most beautiful cities this January for an educational and recreational visit to a city that regulates cannabis like alcohol. CS Travel has arranged an exclusive visit for reform-minded Americans that includes a private tour of some of Amsterdam's most renowned coffee shops, educational seminars with coffee shop proprietors, local law enforcement, members of the Cannabis Retailers Association, and Normal staff. Entertainment includes a special evening at the Boom Chicago Comedy Club, canal tours, visits to the city's many museums, including the world-famous Van Gogh Museum. Don't just wonder about Amsterdam, experience the beauty and freedom of this unique city firsthand with CS Travel and Normal Sensible Amsterdam Tour. Pricing information is available online at coffeeshoptravel.com. That's coffeeshoptravel.com. Or call toll-free at 800-816-1846. That's 800-816-1846. Be a sensible American. Visit Amsterdam with CS Travel and Normal this January. Call 1-800-816-1846 right now to book your trip. More information is available at normal.org. Welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Today, it is Wednesday, September 19th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to help end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit NORML.org to make your donation or join Normal today. Folks, we have an information-packed audio stash for you today. We're going to have news about how cannabidiol, a non-psychoactive cannabinoid in marijuana, may actually mitigate the causes for mad cow disease in animals and humans. We'll have that story in just a minute and an in-depth analysis from Normal senior policy analyst Paul Armentano. Also on the program today, our regular Wednesday cannabis science segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. And we'll round out our audio stash today with some of the music that happened at the Boston Freedom Rally last weekend. More information about everything we discuss in every day's show is available right up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Let's get to our daily news. Our news today from Valbonne, France. Pot compound protective against mad cow disease, other fatal brain disorders, study says. The administration of the non-psychoactive cannabinoid cannabidiol, or CBD, inhibits prion accumulation in the brain and protects neurons against prion toxicity, according to preclinical data published in the September 5th edition of the Journal of Neuroscience. Prion accumulation, or the accumulation of abnormal protein-based infectious particles in the brain, is the cause of various transmissible fatal neurodegenerative diseases in both humans and animals, including bovine spongiform encephalopathy, known as mad cow disease, and Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. No therapeutic treatments for prion diseases are currently available. Investigators at the National Center for Scientific Research in France reported that the administration of CBD, quote, limited the cerebral accumulation of protease-resistant prion protein and significantly increased the survival time, close quote, in a dose-dependent manner in animals infected with a strain of prion disease. Quote, our results suggest that CBD may protect neurons against the multiple molecular and cellular factors involved in the different steps of the neurodegenerative process, which takes place during prion infection, close quote, authors concluded. They continued, quote, when combined with its ability to target the brain and its lack of toxic side effects, CBD may represent a promising new anti-prion drug, close quote. Previous preclinical studies of CBD have shown the compound to inhibit malignant cancer cell growth and protect neurons against alcohol-induced brain damage. Other studies have demonstrated that cannabinoids can delay disease progression in animal models of several neurodegenerative diseases, including Alzheimer's disease, multiple sclerosis, and amyotrophic lateral sclerosis or Lou Gehrig's disease. More information about CBD is available in the Normal Report, Emerging Clinical Applications for Cannabis and Cannabinoids. We have links to this story and to the Emerging Clinical Applications Report on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Joining us today to discuss the Mad Cow CBD story further is Normal Senior Policy Analyst Paul Armentano. Paul, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Good to be here, Chris.
Great to speak with you today, Paul. Now, this story from the weekly press release last week has gotten a fair amount of media play. Again, the headline, Pot Compound Protective Against Mad Cow Disease, Other Fatal Brain Disorders. Now, this study specifically looked at cannabidiol, or CBD. First, tell us what CBD is. I know it's a non-psychoactive compound.
It is one of the 60-plus compounds that's been identified in natural marijuana, and unlike THC, it is a non-psychoactive compound. That means that it is not associated with the user having euphoria after they consume it. However, that is not to mean that it does not have therapeutic qualities. Cannabidiol does bind to the cannabinoid receptors, and it has long been known as a compound that possesses anti-inflammatory qualities. There's been some emerging research showing that it can potentially be an anti-cancer agent in certain cell lines, and there's been some data showing that it has some neuroprotective qualities as well. So clearly, it is a compound that's, you know, worthy of further study, and frankly, it's rather ridiculous that it's considered to be a Schedule I drug at all, as because of the fact it's actually not psychoactive. It does not make a person high.
So, Paul, all cannabinoids, whether they make you high or not, are considered Schedule I at this point.
Yes.
And so this study with the mad cow disease used naturally extracted CBD, not as synthetic variation like dronabinol for THC and the drug Marinol.
There are synthetic analogs of cannabidiol, and they are being studied as we speak. Unlike dronabinol, there is not a legal FDA-approved synthetic form of cannabidiol, but there clearly are CBD agonists that different companies are researching and exploring.
And again, this study looked at mad cow disease. This is something that touches a nerve across the world, in part because there is no known treatment or cure for animals or humans.
Well, mad cow is one of the reasons people are so concerned about a disease like mad cow is because it's a transmissible disease. It can be spread from animal to animal or person to person, or in some cases animal to person if they were to potentially eat food from cattle that was tainted with this disease. It's what's known as a transmissible. It's from a family of transmissible brain diseases, not diseases that are just relegated to animals as well. There are some human forms of brain diseases that fall into this family that are fatal in humans, although they are somewhat rare. And essentially, these are diseases that are linked to the accumulation of the prion protein, and the rapid accumulation of that protein seems to be associated with neurodegeneration, a killing of the brain, for lack of better terms. And what they found in this study was that in cells and also in mice that were given a form of this disease, that when they were administered cannabidiol, they had a much longer survival time than mice that were not given cannabidiol. And when they actually examined the brains of these mice, they found very little evidence of prion accumulation in the mice that were given cannabidiol.
So this is really working on a cellular level as well, but it also goes further to the molecular level to protect brain cells.
That certainly seems to be what's going on. We've seen that with malignant cancer cells in breast cancer and lung cancer and skin cancer and certain other cell lines where they've done similar work in petri dishes and also in animals. And they have done that sort of work with both THC and CBD, and they found both compounds to be rather effective in isolating the malignant cells and killing those cells off while leaving the surrounding cells unharmed.
And Paul, when we interviewed in the past about the Alzheimer's disease studies, it was cannabidiol that was effective there in taking away some of the amyloid plaque in the brain and helping rejuvenate brain cells as well.
Well, actually, THC does that fairly well, too. So the cannabinoids they have tested when they are looking at Alzheimer's and they are looking, as you said, of this accumulation of plaque, both the administration of THC and CBD have shown, at least in, cellular models and animal models, to be helpful in neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's. And when we're talking about this family of diseases, we also have to include things like Parkinson's, MS, Lou Gehrig's disease. I mean, these are all neurodegenerative diseases, and we know anecdotally, we've heard reports from patients claiming that marijuana can help halt the progression of these sort of diseases, for several decades now, and it's really only been in the past 8 or 9 years that scientists are now beginning to finally explore this and say, hey, there is something to this beyond just potential temporary symptomatic relief. We're actually talking in some of these cases about the possibility of cannabinoids halting the progression of these diseases and possibly offering some neuroprotection, like we're talking about here with mad cow. And as some other researchers have looked into issues of traumatic brain injury, brain cell death from resulting from stroke, and whether cannabinoids can help protect the brain in some of those circumstances.
Now, the French researchers in this study in France at the Center for Scientific Research say in their journal report that, quote, the administration of CBD limited the cerebral accumulation of protease-resistant prion protein. So basically, they're saying here that cannabidiol will protect brain cells from accumulating these prions, even if they're being ingested. So theoretically, CBD could be developed into some sort of drug that would be a vaccine against animals getting mad cow disease, even perhaps humans getting it.
Yes, sure, theoretically. Actually, I should also note that in this particular study, they actually did compare a CBD to a CBD agonist. And the reason I did not go in depth in my summary of the study about how the agonist performed was because it didn't perform particularly well at all. And in fact, CBD performed much better than the agonist. You see that quite often. There are some other THC agonists as well that have been studied for their anti-cancer potential, and they have not tested as well as the actual cannabinoids as well. But you are certainly correct. The holy grail for some of these researchers would be to develop some sort of pharmaceutical-based product that would be neuroprotective and based on the endocannabinoid system. And there are researchers in different parts of the world working on such a product. The most well-known one is probably a drug that was in production known as dexanabinol, which was a cannabinoid agonist and that was developed strictly to try and protect the brain from traumatic brain injury and certain other injuries that could occur from either stroke or nerve damage. While that drug tested very well in animals and also tested well in a pilot clinical study of Israelis, unfortunately, when the drug was tested in a very large multi-center phase 3 trial They found no difference in patients who had traumatic brain injury that were administered the drug versus those patients who were administered a placebo. And that drug is no longer in production for that reason.
And Paul, mad cow disease, again, is such a serious hot-button issue around the world. I mean, do you think that this particular research avenue could receive more funding in the future?
You know, I'd be very curious, not having spoken personally with the researchers who conducted this work in France, and frankly, not being familiar with this research team, what prompted this particular study? As I noted, while there are forms of this disease that can be developed in humans, they're quite rare. I think the most common form of it in humans still strikes only one out of a million people. Generally, when you have exceptionally rare diseases in the human population, even fatal ones, it's very hard to get funding for research that would look into trying to halt or prevent those diseases, simply because it costs a whole lot of money to do the research, and there's a, you know, very small population that's affected that ultimately would use the drug. So I don't know if when the researchers began this work, they were specifically looking for a drug that might potentially halt the spread of mad cow disease in animals, or if they had broader concerns about this actual family of diseases and its impact in humans. But it would certainly be interesting to see what prompted this investigation and if there are any follow-ups.
And I have to ask here, Paul, would regular cannabis consumers have enough cannabidiol in their system to have these protective qualities?
When these studies are done in animals, you know, most often they are administered quite large amounts of cannabinoids. They are receiving the cannabinoids in a way that humans don't. I mean, whether humans are smoking marijuana or they're ingesting marijuana, what they're certainly not doing is taking or being administered cannabinoids either intravenously or intracranially, which is the way it's often done in these studies. So it's really hard to say. What we can say is that it's promising that some of these compounds likely have neuroprotective qualities. It's unknown at what sort of dose one would need to have those neuroprotective qualities in humans. And clearly there's also a time issue. When one looks at the failed trial of dexanabinol, the researchers themselves admitted that there was on average a 6-hour delay between when a patient suffered the traumatic event and when they were administered the drug. You know, it's very hard to try and reverse brain damage when there's a 6-hour time lag like that. While you can do an animal study and administer the drug immediately, it's much, much more difficult in the human world to have that kind of proximity between the incident and trying to give people the treatment. And it's unknown whether marijuana's effectiveness, if it's shown to be effective as a neuroprotective agent, how much of that protection is contingent on the administration of the drug almost immediately after a traumatic event.
And do you think we're going to hear more about this particular research, you know, again, peer-reviewed and published in the Journal of Neuroscience? Or do you think the media, you know, they're going to pick up on these cannabinoid subtleties? Or because this is anything associated with marijuana, it will be dismissed, even with the importance of the topic of mad cow disease?
You know, I've been surprised how much coverage there's already been on this story. Now, I suspect that any time you mention hot button issues like mad cow and pot, that the media might care. But I've been surprised at how much international response there's been. You know, just this morning, I saw stories on this in the Sydney Morning Herald in Australia and the Daily Telegraph in England and in a couple of newspapers from India. So clearly the press is interested. I've been frustrated that I believe there's a lack of depth in their coverage. I think it's a bit sensational to throw up a headline that says marijuana may cure mad cow. In fact, this study was not looking at all whether cannabidiol had curative properties. It was simply looking at whether it could help slow down the progression of the disease, which, as you noted, is fatal, and there's no treatment for. And I think the media is really missing the boat if they don't see that the bigger picture is looking at the use of cannabinoids in the treatment of these neurodegenerative disease families. This isn't just about mad cow. This is about Parkinson's. It's about Alzheimer's. It's about MS. It's about Lou Gehrig's disease. And it's about a number of other diseases that involve the decline of brain function over time, for which there is no cure. But in preliminary research, marijuana seems to be effective at halting this process. And that's the story here.
Righto, Paul. Well, this has been a great discussion here today. I really appreciate you joining us to discuss this story.
Sure, no problem, Chris.
Thanks again, Paul. Paul Armentano is Normal's senior policy analyst. You can contact him directly at paul@normal.org. Stay tuned. Our cannabis science segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine is coming up next. Wednesday here on the Audio Stash, we get the chance to talk about the science of cannabis with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Mitch is professor of psychology at the State University of New York. He's author of Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, and editor of the new book, Pot Politics. We have links to the books at normalaudiostash.com, and you can also catch Mitch's new monthly column in High Times magazine. Mitch, welcome back today.
Happy to be back.
Always good to speak with you, Mitch. You sent by a very interesting email this week about a new method to try and quell cannabis use in teenagers. The study is called the Adolescent Cannabis Checkup, Randomized Trial of a Brief Intervention for Young Cannabis Users. Now, this study looked at 40 young people aged 14 to 19 and tried brief motivational enhancement therapy. So let's talk about that method there first. You know, how does that differ from the traditional methods employed to try and talk to teens about cutting back or stopping their cannabis use until they're adults?
I was really pleased to see this abstract, Chris, because this therapy is not one of those treatments that berates teens into the idea that they're supposed to be abstinent forever. It's much more about enhancing your own motivation to quit or cut down by asking them their own questions about what is it that you would like to see happen in your life, what are the things that you see as the big advantages of using cannabis, what are the things that you see as some disadvantages, and what do you think might improve if you decreased your use, what do you think might be worse if you decreased your use, and really letting them hash it out. I want to emphasize, too, that the assessment here is actually an intriguing part of this treatment, because you sit down with somebody and walk through the last month and ask them, how much marijuana did you use on this day? How much did you use on this day? And people are often surprised to learn that they're smoking markedly more and more often than they had originally thought. And sometimes that is the beginning of increasing motivation to decrease use, simply by looking at how much use they've actually experienced.
Righto. Now, the word brief is used here. So how short is the treatment for the full run of the therapy?
Generally, these treatments are 12 sessions or less. And for the motivational enhancement therapies, they're often 4 sessions or less. And that's really, really a big draw for a lot of folks who would love to come in and chat about their use, but don't want to commit to some kind of year-long once a week regular attendance at something, when in fact we're all very busy and we've all got a lot to do despite any stereotypes about cannabis users. And so this treatment was actually just a 2-session intervention, and folks got to come in literally twice and decrease their use after that little of an experience.
And I hate to say this, but when I see the term motivational therapy, and I joked with you a bit about this off-air just a moment ago, but when I see that phrase, I think of the Matt Foley character on Saturday Night Live, played by Chris Farley, you know, living in a van down by the river. But, you know, this therapy we're talking about in this study today, this is not a scared straight kind of tactic here, but a more positive motivation by adults.
Well, and quite the contrary to the usual scared straight tactics, and I think people are often surprised by that. So they come in, and one of the first questions I often ask when doing this kind of treatment is, tell me the things you like about pot. And as they're listing things, they're looking at me and kind of laughing, like, are you going to, you know, are you going to go on, or is this really part of the deal? But in part, by understanding what someone values with cannabis, you can get a feel for, is this going to be difficult for them to change, and what are the things that they're going to want to look for to do instead? If they are going to use less, what are they going to want to do in order to get some of the same advantages, some of the same experiences, while essentially smoking less cannabis?
Now, you know, a lot of kids who end up in treatment for cannabis are there because of a court order or even a parental order. Now, that wasn't the case for this particular group in this study, but being there on the whole is not necessarily out of choice by the teens.
That seems to be the case here in the States. This study was done in Australia, and actually these weren't treatment-seeking students. These weren't treatment-seeking people. They just were coming in for a checkup, if you will. They were concerned about their cannabis use and wanted to talk to someone about it. When I have court referred or people who've been, you know, kicked into treatment, so to speak, what I'll often say is, would you like to be here? And they say no. Then I say, well, what could we do to make the best use of this time? And often I discover that, you know, cannabis really isn't the issue. They're clinically depressed. They've got an anxiety disorder. They've got some other problems they'd like to talk about first. And I am more than willing to do that, in part because I think it builds a good therapeutic relationship. And then once you're, you know, hashing out some of these other problems, if cannabis is contributing, now I can really see it as part of the big picture. If I'm, you know, in a setting where, look, I really got to do these two sessions and we got to intervene about cannabis, I'll say, hey, I know you don't really want to be here. Would you mind if we just did this assessment about your cannabis use, and then we'll sort of go from there? And people are usually willing to walk through the last 30 days and say how much pot they smoked. And it's not like I'm asking them to go to some, you know, 12-step meeting or anything like that. I'm really just asking how much they use. And if I do it in a way that is non-judgmental, if I, you know, say, okay, and 1 gram that day, and how about the day before? Instead of this kind of, oh, my God, a whole gram in one day, you know, then, of course, that wrecks the relationship and makes them not want to be candid in the assessment.
Now, I have to ask, and I know this will be a really tough question here, Mitch, but, you know, are there teens who might not necessarily be dependent or problem cannabis users, teens who essentially use cannabis in the same manner as responsible adults consuming it?
It's you know, one of those things that can get me in a lot of trouble, but in fact, the data suggests that, you know, early use does increase your risk for dependence. Early use can alter brain structure and, at least in one data set, decrease IQ. So I can't say, oh, this is absolutely harmless for teens. But I do have teens who come in. I'll ask them all their respiratory symptoms. I'll ask them about their school functioning. I'll ask them about work. I'll ask them about their relationships. And really, everything is going okay. Now, often people say, well, they're probably lying to you. And I would, you know, want to talk to a parent or a best friend or something like that just to make sure that's the case. But that really is possible, even though it's something that I'm always apprehensive about discussing because of the potential for dependence down the line or some kind of alteration in IQ or brain function.
So in this situation, a teenager may talk positively about cannabis smoking with their friends, you know, getting high, playing music or video games or other things, and then talk about some negative experiences, maybe getting freaky with their family when they're high around their parents and perhaps having to spend some money on cannabis. You know, after all these positives and negatives are put out there, what happens in this type of therapy?
And then, Chris, what I would often do is then have them elaborate on these negatives and see if there's more to them than they may have initially thought. If I'm feeling like I've got somebody who's into the idea, I would have them give a number, 0 to 10, how important are each of these things, and then reflect back to them. You know, you've got 3 positive things, and they're rated 6, 7, and 8. You've got 5 negative things, and they're rated 7, 8, 2. You know, let's talk about how would you feel about using less, given, you know, what we've laid out here. And often people are very conflicted, and they're really not eager to use less. And they're definitely not willing to go down to zero. And the fact that I'm willing to work with them without demanding abstinence often builds a lot of support. And then we'll often do that assessment, and you know, they'll realize they're smoking 5 days a week when they thought they were smoking one. And I'll say, is there a goal you'd like to set about how frequently would you use? And often they're willing to say, well, gee, I thought I was using twice a week, and here I'm using five times a week. I'd like to go down to two.
Right.
And I'll say, super, give that a shot. And let's talk about what would make it easy to do that. What do you think are going to be the difficult situations? How could you tell your friends, oh, hey, I'm not going to get high right now because I have to do X, Y, and Z? And then just sort of walking through those drug refusal skills and all that kind of stuff.
And is there a brief motivational enhancement? Is this a less expensive type of therapy for teens than the traditional inpatient interventions and the like? Because, you know, for parents, even teens themselves who want to do something to cut back and stop smoking cannabis right now, cost is certainly a factor for the voluntary therapies out there.
Absolutely. And as you can imagine, two sessions is almost invariably cheaper than 12. And my pals at the Association for Advancement of Behavior Therapy are often trained in this style of treatment. And it's so much easier to do this early on than it is to deal with some court-ordered, you know, inpatient 28-day dry out thing, which is invariably going to be a real hassle for anybody who's got as busy a life as most teens have today.
Also, Mitch, can parents be trained to do this kind of brief therapy themselves, or does it really need to be a third-party therapist here?
I mentioned this a little bit in my book, The Parent's Guide to Marijuana, that's coming out soon, and in fact, I feel like it's hard for kids to be candid in the assessment with their parents. It's hard for somebody to sit down with dad and say, yes, I got high every single day last week. You know, you can imagine that's just not going to go over in the same sort of way. And when adults are non-judgmental about this, kids really do find it endearing. It's wonderful to be able to say, yes, I smoked a gram in a day, and have the person go, yes, in the day before, instead of, oh, my God. So, you know, you can imagine it's just much better to have somebody outside give that support.
And what about for parents who are themselves cannabis consumers, Mitch? Does that work for or against the interactions with their teenage daughters or sons when addressing the issue?
It can be a two-edged sword when the parent is a user. If you can point to how you're functioning well and everything is going okay, and by the way, you're using as an adult whose brain is already developed and whose schooling is already finished, and who is, you know, functioning well socially and recreationally and occupationally, then, in fact, you can say, look, I've really got it. However, if you're, you know, not getting out of bed till 1 in the afternoon because you're sitting there with the bong and you haven't had a job in 2 weeks and things like that, then clearly you've got an opportunity to say, okay, I'm struggling with this too. Why don't we do this together? Let's be each other's support on this. Let's make this happen as a family. And then suddenly it's you guys doing something together rather than you berating them about their need to change if you're not willing.
But again, there is social acceptance that teens will come into contact with alcohol. I mean, we know from government survey data that over 40% of high schoolers drink, and many families do try and control that a bit within the home.
And in fact, it's unfortunate, and the data do suggest that teens who have had alcohol, particularly in a religious setting, in a small dose, as part of a meal, in a comfortable situation with friends and parents, seem to do markedly better than the ones who had to sneak downstairs and, you know, grab a fifth and turn it up and then sneak back away somewhere. And yet with cannabis, we just don't have the legal situation or even the data to say that that's probably more adaptive. We just don't know.
All righto, just to recap here, brief motivational enhancement therapy is not the Matt Foley coming in to tell you about living in a van down by the river, but it is a cost-effective therapy that can really have a good impact on cutting down or stopping a teenager from consuming cannabis until they're an adult.
Exactly.
Righto, Mitch. Well, I think this has been a great conversation here today. Thank you again for joining us this week and every week right here on the Audio Stash.
Oh, happy to help.
Thanks again, Mitch. Dr. Mitch Earlywine is professor of psychology at the State University of New York. He's author of Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, and editor of the book Pot Politics. We have links to the books at normalaudiostash.com, and you can check out Mitch's new monthly column in High Times magazine. Stay tuned. We've got music from the Boston Freedom Rally coming up next.
Hey, is it 420 yet? This is Rick Cusick from High Times magazine, and you're tuned into Normal's Audio Stash.
We're going to round out our show today with music from the Boston Freedom Rally. We're going to have some more of those interviews and on-the-spot talks and speeches in tomorrow's Audio Stash. But today, let's get to some of the music. There's a great group. They're called Primary Others. They're a Boston local band. They've been here on the Audio Stash before. Here they are on stage at the Boston Freedom Rally, September 15th.
What's up, Boston? How y'all feeling today? We getting high. Just keep your eye out. They'll be looking for you. Just be sneaky. Pick your spots. We Primary Others from Wild Damn. It goes like this. I said, if you want to get busy like this, move your hips a little bit. Come on. If you want to get busy like that, put a little in your track now. If you want to get busy like this, move your hips a little bit. Come on. If you want to get busy like that, put a little yo. Yo, ladies, move your backside, fellas. Slap time when these kids rap wise. Watch your ship capsize. That's fine. Pack 9 pencils in the holster. Axe why the tracks dry. Instrumentals in this holster. Do it how I'm supposed to document it. So if it's hot, I said it. If not, I never meant it. Stop casting me on let it. It just passed the weed and let me get it.
Sounds rough. I'm around tough people wound up. Let's break the chains that surround us. Make the ground bust in the brown dust. We now must stand strong. Never let the sound rust. Allow trust to flow through your body like a freezing cold river.
Make your damn bones shiver.
Little dude, so grab a blanket. I'm glad you made it. Primary with the beat, throw back and leave your face.
We some really big dummies. No ventriloquist with twist dummies. When the rhythm hit funky, you can hang like monkeys. Still funny looking bummy. Too much booze in the tummy. So if you get in front of me, it could get ugly.
Baby, please hug me. At least stay and hug me. I don't wanna walk away. No, crummy. The only thing above us is the sky. That's why we're never shy, man. Just divine.
I said, if you wanna get busy like this, move your hips a little bit. Come on, if you wanna get busy like that, put a little in your track now. If you wanna get busy like this, move your hips a little bit. Come on, if you wanna get busy like that, yeah. Yo, the name is King Senior. I'm playing the ring leader. My aim is to bring speakers to places you've never seen before. Game my teacher, just come in and coach you how to climb your collar, cause it's all that he wrote. The only baller with no dough. Slow professional. MCs can't keep up. I slow the session down. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Dimension out. I'll hit you the answer. Don't question the style.
Don't question them. King Senior bench, press a pen. It's Philkins. Never break a George Benjamin. I'm grimy like the rest of them. Interesting man. Make a split session in, but don't mention it. The skies are blue. Find me true when the night's through. Making my stew on my bike. Back off. I will never fight you. Cause I don't like boots. I'm a shaman. Making night
there. Building with Philkins. Winning like Lenny Wilkins. Many catch feelings like that's really what he said. Muddy bed. Dirty bloody head. Running from the feds. Nonetheless. From the thunder rats. Nothing but the best. No. What a bet? Put a gosh of Vega on it, but only if you roll it big like Schwarzenegger's arms. This flavor, call it bomb shit out the closet with the skeleton. Guaranteed your family be jiggling like gelatin. The hell of it be reppin'
when we step into the session with the weapon. We a gentleman, not made for measuring. Treasuring our souls, we are clever in control. Never getting old, minds are staying young, but we let them grow. Let me show you the way to be okay.
You can say,
yo, I made it through another day.
Sure,
my brothers say some words that'll shake your nerves. Sound breaking curve on the face.
I said, if you wanna get busy like this, move your hips a little bit. Come on, if you wanna get busy like that, put a little in your track now. If you wanna get busy like this, move your hips like that, dude, right there. If you wanna get busy like that, put a little in your track.
What up, Hempfest? How you doing, Boston?
Got CDs in the back and t-shirts right next to the graveyard barbecue. Who's coming up next? All right, Boston, how y'all feeling out there?
to give a big shout out to MassKid for having us. We've been coming here since we were little kids, man, riding the bus and riding the train here, seeing great bands like Sam Black, Church, and Tree perform here our whole life. So we want to keep this shit going. All you youngsters out here, it's great to see you here.
That was Primary Others live on stage at the Boston Freedom Rally. We have links to their MySpace page right up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. We're going to have some more speeches and music from the Boston Freedom Rally in tomorrow's Audio Stash. Make sure you tune in and get your stash every day. Listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 420 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.